support. Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks very much. And thank you for the opportunity again to come and to share the Dharma with you all. And it's a special night tonight because the parami that I'm going to talk about is wisdom. And wisdom is really underlying everything that we're doing as beings trying to make sense of what we're doing in this world. The paramis are qualities with which we live. And I thought it was very appropriate for my visit to talk about the qualities with which we live wisely, beneficially, helpfully, spiritually, freely in the world. The paramis are not themselves about deep meditation practice. They are practice in the world. And wisdom is a sort of underlying all of them. Wisdom is really important, and you may not know, but in the Buddhist teaching, the Buddha didn't put as an icon practices like mindfulness or concentration. In fact, in one of the great suttas or texts which guide the Vipassana community or Western Dharma community, which is the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha said, you just need sufficient mindfulness for the sake of your inner freedom. He didn't say that the whole Buddhist path is called mindfulness. There has been a tendency in the Western world to put mindfulness as a kind of a big status, a big icon, and say, and make almost an equivalence between mindfulness and Buddhist meditation. The Buddha didn't say that. The Buddha said, you need mindfulness sufficient for your inner freedom. You need concentration sufficient for your inner freedom. You need other qualities that you practice with enough so that you can experience and develop inner freedom. And the interesting thing is, we all have already inner freedom. Of course we need to develop it. But this is a quality which we grow in ourselves just by opening our eyes. As we were a small child playing in the grass and the sand, and we see the bigness of life, and we see ourselves, and we see these crazy adults. What are they doing? They're a lost case already. But it's something innate, and that's why we need to really encourage our own inner freedom, our own innate freedom, not as something we can only learn from the Buddha. But we did it just now. We didn't have instructions in meditation that said, you've got to think of something special out there. What we were doing in meditation is listening, basically listening. What's the breath? What's the mind? What's the body? What's it doing? That's inner wisdom. All right, so be a little careful not to make icons out of the teaching and out of the Buddha as well. When you meet the Buddha on the path, kill him. That famous phrase. Of course we love the teachings of the Buddha. The Buddhist teachings for me, or the early Buddhist teachings for me, are in a sense the authority, but not as icon, more as an invitation to explore the reality that's opening to us every minute. So having said that, I want to go into the wisdom a little bit. First of all, by describing what is not wisdom, or what is defined as ignorance. Ignorance, or avidya in the Sanskrit, is not knowing or not understanding. Is about the sense, firstly, that we're functioning on automatic pilot. By the way, only in America do you have cars with cruise control. You don't have them anywhere else in the world. I've only seen cars with cruise control in America. So, So it's a little bit like that, you know, you press a button and you're on cruise control. And suddenly all your life is gone. Where is it gone? It's all went on cruise control. So that's one way which we can look at ignorance, not seeing this sense of being an automatic, functioning, okay, working, living, family, and so on and so on. And our life's kind of disappearing through our fingers. Another way of looking at ignorance is being busy with survival, with what I need, with what I like and what I don't like, what I need, what is good for me, what are my boundaries, staying within the comfort zone. Remember the mythological story of the Buddha, that he was a prince in a castle, and the castle, he had everything, but in fact the castle was a prison and he was desperate to get out. He was inside the comfort zone, and the messengers that came to tell him wake up was death, a dead person, poverty, suffering, sickness. Like, these are the wake-up calls. We can't keep them out. However much we build our comfort zone, however much we pay our Medicare bills and whatever, we can't keep out changeability of life. There's no way that we can build the walls as high as we want. So it's this sense of building a wall around us and calling it the comfort zone, what I want, what I don't want, but it becomes a prison. And that's another definition of ignorance, or not seeing. And it's a cause of suffering, this sense of just confusion and limited life that we live, and forgetting the innate wisdom which we have in all of us. And so I see it, by the way. I gave a talk at Spirit Rock last night. It's amazing to see 400 people in the room. And it was a talk on how we are using some of these tools of wisdom and compassion in peace work in the Middle East, trying to make peace between groups and Israelis and Palestinians. And it's really interesting, faced with this situation of ignorance. One of the forms of ignorance is my views. I believe I am right. That's a form of ignorance. I am right. You are wrong. I am here. You are there. You are my enemy forever. This kind of division, very hard to break. It's another definition of not knowing, of not seeing, of not having that wisdom. So there are some of the examples of ignorance. And wisdom, on the other side, is basically an awakened life. You can call it an awakened life, keeping your eyes and your ears open, being awake, even if it's uncomfortable, even if this awake sees things which are not comfortable, out of the comfort zone, like the Buddha was aware of sickness, death, and so on. And one of the messengers of the Buddha was a monk. So in other words, beyond, something outside, something. So looking at having an awakened life is basically the parami of wisdom. And I want to go into this a little bit, but I do want to say that the parami of wisdom, that is the quality of wisdom that we express through our actions, our thoughts, our speech, and the way we train in this in life, is necessary for all the other paramis. And I mentioned this on the Saturday retreat, that you may have seen the Tibetan picture of the hand with the eye in the middle. It's actually become a universal symbol also in my part of the world. And many people, especially traditional folk religion of Islam and also Jews, have this symbol the hand with the eye in the middle. But actually it comes from the Tibetan tradition, and it means the paramis. There are five paramis, and the sixth is the wisdom eye. And the wisdom eye, there are actually 10 paramis, but the Tibetans say there are 6, and some of the Theravada also say there are 6, so it doesn't really matter, but it makes the others possible, the wisdom, because you can't have the others without the wisdom. For example, the generosity, which we talked about, which you talked about just now, if we don't have wisdom, we don't know how to give. We don't know what is giving. We might think giving is giving something and then getting something back. Or we might think giving is about measuring. Or we might give foolishly, suddenly, spontaneously give everything away. I haven't seen people do that so much, but... the other paramis, for example, mindfulness with wisdom creates insight. Mindfulness without wisdom can be a little bit like just being cautious and careful, which is not really the point. I'm sitting with an amazing Dharma teacher that was a monk for 10 years. I was sitting with him in a restaurant in Tel Aviv, and he made a wrong movement, and his whole dinner plate flew onto the ground from the table onto the floor. There was the plate and there was the food on the floor next to it. And you think, well, a Dharma teacher, he was a monk for 10 years, how could he spill his food? Of course he could spill his food. Of course you can spill a cup of coffee. You can be meditating for 10 years and still spill a cup of coffee. Why not? Because mindfulness is not about being a kind of a sort of control freak. It's about insight, allowing yourself to see. And sometimes you fall over. Concentration with wisdom. Concentration can be very closed. It can be concentration. What does it mean? It means shutting out and concentrating on. So if you're over concentrating on something, on the breath, for example, without wisdom, then you're closed. You can get yourself shut down instead of opened out. So over concentrating without wisdom is also not so helpful. Belief or faith without wisdom can be extreme, can end up fundamentalism. But with wisdom, faith moves to trust and moves to the heart opening. So all wisdom is needed for all the other qualities in life. So what is wisdom? What kind of knowing is wisdom? Because we think, we've read a lot of books, most of us, and so a lot of us think that wisdom is about reading a lot of books. I sometimes use the example of this piece in the Middle East, that all the professors, and there are so many professors, you know, lots of Jewish professors, and all the thinkers, and all the writers, and all the intellectuals and the universities and so on, none of them can solve the problem of people killing your neighbor. Why is that? Because it's not enough to read and write all these books. And the Buddha said so. This is a kind of knowing which is intellectual knowing, conceptual knowing. Conceptual knowing is not a problem. The Buddha didn't say you mustn't have conceptual knowing. And actually, this is a very nice part of the path, that the Buddhist path uses all the qualities and powers that we have in us, including the intelligent mind. Again and again, the Buddha said, learn, sit, listen to talks like you're doing now. Open your mind, listen and contemplate. Search for the truth, including the intellectual mind. But don't confuse the intellectual mind with a more sublime wisdom, with a deeper wisdom, which is not the intellectual mind. You can't solve, as Einstein said, You can't solve problems with the same mind that created them. The mind, it's a deeper place, the wisdom. There's a very, I don't know if you know, in the Bible, the Hebrew word for knowing is exactly the same word as making love. It's amazing. The same Hebrew word for knowing is the same word as making love. And so knowing, first of all, is not a dry intellectual analytical knowing. It is loving. Knowing and loving are together in wisdom. I almost don't need to say another word. That's such a, you know, such a strong and clear message about the way that we know in the Dharma. And actually we practiced it just in a few minutes together, watching the breath and the body and the mind with kindness is knowing, with loving, with closeness, with intimacy. Watching the breath, it's important to us. It's our oxygen. It's our life. So we don't say, oh, there's the breath, and there's the body, and there's a thought going on. Well, it's not important and not interesting. And no, it's us. So let's be close. Let's be intimate. Let's be loving. Same with what we see. And a child is loving. A child watches an ant crossing the path with quite a lot of love. Maybe sometimes can after that squash it. You know, children. But there's kind of an engagement and an empathy. And there's an empathy in wisdom. And it's not dry, it's not analytic, or just analytic. And so it's a quality close to deep listening. It has a quality of listening. Listening is something that is a non-analytic process. If we listen, we kind of get ready to receive. That's what listening is. We ready ourselves to receive. And there's the birds outside, and if you listen very carefully, we can hear maybe the leaves in the trees, or we can hear our own breath. So it's kind of, listening is close to this sense of awareness, being awake. It's also beyond views. Wisdom tells us that more or less anything we think or say is a view, because it's based on our own history, our own point of view, where we're coming from and who we are. And that creates a word or a sentence or even a thought. But we can't say that this thought or this word is the absolute truth. We don't know that. We're always looking at things through our glasses. We're always looking at things from our perspective of our conditioning, of our history. So an American will look at things like an American would look, or an Israeli, or a dog would look at things like a dog would look at things, different from a cat and different from a human being. And we all look at things differently. And so we can't say that there is in that absolute truth. As I think Aquinas, the Christian father said, it's the truth that owns us. We don't own the truth. So this point of having, knowing that we are always having a point of view, that knowing is wisdom. But believing our point of view, that's not wisdom. Believing that it's more than a point of view, it's a fact. That's not wisdom. So here's the difference. But if we understand that every time we say that's a fact, that's actually a point of view, that is wisdom. So it's beyond views, it's beyond concept, it's often non-verbal, a sense of intuition, a kind of a feeling of something being right for us, a sense of rightness, clarity. There is a direction. An intuitive sense of knowing what's right or where to go or what's authentic, that there is the voice of wisdom in us. Sense of empathy, sense of being with others, like I say, knowing and loving. These are some of the qualities of knowing. It's insight. And if that word insight means something, I mean, reflect on that word insight. It's not intellectual knowing. Insight, seeing in insight. It's not intellectual knowing, insight. That's why insight is used as as actually the same word as vipassana. Vipassana means seeing in. And, or seeing, seeing closely. V means actually separation or distinction, but being able to see inside things. And this ability to have insight is a part of the knowledge of wisdom. And I'll give you an example. One of the classic examples of wisdom that is used in the teachings is being more familiar with causation, with cause and effect. If we're not familiar with it, we can just feel that life is just hitting us on the head all the time. Now there's it just rises. Oh, there's a storm. Oh, there's a financial crash. Oh, there's another problem. Oh, the bank phoned up and said you don't have any money. Oh, it's all happening. It's all on my head. If we open our eyes a little bit, we see the way things are rolling, the way an action brings a result. That's not intellectual knowing. The way a kind action might bring a kind result. The way we help others we might find our life gets more pure, more soft somehow. There was a story that I like, a short story by Tolstoy, and it was about a false note, like a $100 bill that's printed. How you say that's counterfeit? That's the word. Mm-hmm. That's a counterfeit bill. So someone used it, and the person in the shop received it, and then they realized that it's counterfeit, and then they had a terrible fight, the people in the shop, about this note, this counterfeit, and it nearly destroyed their marriage, the husband and the wife. They passed it on to somebody else. It created big damage there. So they started having fights because how did you do that? And it's breaking our business. And this $100 bill went to the next and the next and the next and created damage wherever it went. And this is a story about a small village, and it was a story how this one thing, this counterfeit $100 bill, it was rubles, Russian rubles, kind of rolled through the village, creating waves of harm and suffering. At the same time, on the other side of the village, someone gave generously food to a poor person. And this poor person went and helped somebody else, and saved a marriage between two people that was just about to split up because, and so on. And there was in this village waves of goodness that just spread through the village and waves of harm spreading through the village in the other direction, and they sort of met together and somehow. And just a beautiful story about causation, about the way things cause each other, that the quality of an action creates the quality of a result. And this is an observation that we can see in our life, how a quality of an action, for example, how generosity brings joy. It's not an intellectual concept, but it's a wisdom it's a wisdom. How joy arises in our life. If we reflect on that itself, that's a wisdom. That's wisdom. There's a wisdom in that. Just understanding how joy arises in our life. That's an understanding of causation. We are observing. And it's an understanding on another level, a deeper level of the human being. So that's an example. One of the major places that we need wisdom is in relationships. And in relationships in the family, in relationships in the workplace, relationships in that are so easily conflicts can be created, and pressure and so on. And we often feel helpless in the face of issues that happen, especially where people are very close to us and they keep pressing our buttons because they're really close. So whereas a stranger wouldn't press our button, someone close to us with one small word and there's an explosion. And where wisdom in those places can make a really big difference. The wisdom to see, for example, the other person's pain or suffering that made them say that thing. That to see the other person's pain needs the wisdom. It's not, especially because we all hide our pain. So it's in a way denied and underneath, but it comes out anyway. And so a person can say something hurtful because of their own pain. And unless we are wise and steady and watchful, we might not see this. We might just react. So, oh, the person's hurting me. I'm going to hurt back. I'll fight back. But if we see with wisdom, with a wisdom eye, oh, this person is suffering. This person is saying that because inside, down, there is pain. And that's the wisdom eye. We have to be very careful with labels, for example, with labeling each other, with labeling a Palestinian. You're a Palestinian, so automatically an enemy. Or you're a Syrian, come from that country, automatically an enemy. The labeling is very damaging. We do it because we are afraid. So we sort of keep people outside and we give them labels. We give ourselves labels sometimes. I'm a Buddhist. That's a label. Try not to say it. We don't need it, actually. Who says we need it? The Buddha didn't say, I'm a Buddhist. So labeling, we have to be careful. Or Christopher, one of my main teachers, says beautifully, he said, use labels tenderly. It's a very nice way of putting it. Be careful about your labeling, but that needs a wisdom there. One of the qualities that we need in our life to be wise is some courage. Sometimes we need to take some risks. Again, if we don't do that, we stay within the comfort zone of the Buddha's castle or palace. We need to take risks because we're living in the unknown. We don't really know what will happen tomorrow. We don't really know what's waiting for us. And living with less certainty is sometimes difficult. We are, the mind is basically trying to predict what will happen all the time. You've probably saw it in your meditation just now, that the mind is busy with scenarios, building scenarios about the future. What will happen next? The mind does it because it's trying to predict what will happen. When I leave here, am I going to go on the route 280, or is there going to be traffic or not traffic? And am I going to, the mind is busy constructing futures in order to make life more easy. But what does that mean? It means trying rather helplessly, because the mind spins endlessly around and around, trying to predict the future, which is unknown. How can we know what the future? Well, how do we know what will happen? I remember as a teenager, the British education system was terrible, because they made you decide at the age of 15 whether your whole life you'll be in science or in art or in humanities or whatever. As a 15-year-old, you have to sort of map your whole life, because that, according to that, you go on these tracks in the education system. You have to specialize at the age of 14. And I remember I was nearly suicidal, trying to decide the whole life. When I'm 30, my decision now, when I'm 20, 30, 40, 50, how can I decide? I was going crazy. And I mean, I've seen it with my children, you know, at that age, in the shall I do this and shall I do that? Shall I go to university and shall I not go to university? Which university? What will I do? Well, shall I marry this person or not marry this person? Well, the way the mind spins around these fateful decisions, endlessly spinning, trying to predict the future, and it's impossible. So the mind is running on a decision making. And wisdom, in a way, lets us step back and live with some uncertainty. No, I don't know what will happen. But I'm approaching the next moment with trust and with my powers of wisdom and mindfulness and listening. And from that, decisions are made. It will just navigate through the present, we're in the present moment, navigating with the wisdom and allowing things to be unknown or uncertain. And in the spiritual world, in terms of spiritual practice, you really need to be comfortable with not knowing. Krishnamurti wrote this beautiful book called Freedom from the Known. What is it, Freedom from the Known? I don't want to be free from the known. I need to know what's going to happen. But it's the mind that says that. I need to know. And the spirit is in another place and wants to be free from the pressure of having to know everything all the time, of having to predict what's going to happen next and be busy with it and think it all out all the time. What's going to happen? What's this? What's that? What's that? And what, giving labels and giving definitions and giving... Spiritually, you need in some way to be comfortable with the unknown, because there is the spirit, there is the non-analytic voice, which is a voice of truth. It doesn't come labeled or in packages called the intellect. The Buddha said, every time he was asked deep questions about reality, he said, sorry, I can't tell you. It's just going to make your mind spin around. And he just left it alone. Like, is there a God? He said, I'm not answering. So we can allow ourselves to be with the unknown and to be with the question. The question is more important than the answer. To be with a question is very healthy. Mostly because the mind gets utterly exhausted, and when you give up, that's the answer. So allowing the unknown, allowing things to stay open, allowing things to stay uncertain, living with uncertainty, riding the waves of uncertainty with wisdom and presence is a spiritual life. But trying to box everything into the known closes us down, puts us back into the automatic pilot, into the cruise control. So the uncertainty is very important for us, and the question is very important, and it's not being trying to squeeze the answer, it's living with the question, living with the mystery. I think an American poet says, if it's not mysterious, it's not true. An American poet, I don't remember who, one of the great American poets. So the wisdom eye is watching life changing, watching things being less certain, being able to explore conditions that arise and pass, to be more loving and with knowing and empathic knowing. And the first of the Eightfold Path, right view, is more or less synonymous with wisdom. Right view is a view, or is an understanding, or is a wisdom which is an integrative wisdom. It's like a holistic wisdom. It's a wisdom that sees us with the world, in the world, that sees the world and us as one, that sees the way we create our life, that we actually create our world, the world. The world creates us. There's a kind of co-creation going on. That's a very big story inside the Buddhist teaching, and I will not talk about it more now, but maybe you can get an intuition of the way we're creating our life all the time, that we are constructing our life, and that this, and so is all other beings, and this being together with all other beings and seeing the way we all create our life together and we all participate together in this world in a kind of holistic way, that's seeing, that's wisdom. That's the eye of wisdom. All the paramis so far, I've mentioned that there's three levels, a kind of ordinary level, a deeper level, and a sort of more ultimate level, and with wisdom too it's the same. With the ordinary level of wisdom, it feels more like presence or mindfulness or just being, like I say, awake and aware, and reducing our sense of being in prison by the automatic pilot. Reducing anger, reducing our being locked in ourselves and locked in our views, and being more happy and cheerful, and being less caught up in our story. Well, that you can define as wisdom on one level. On a deeper level, it is what I said, the questioning, the sense of being open and inquiring, the sense of allowing unknown, questioning our assumptions. What are our assumptions? What are our belief system? We really usually don't know it. We need to kind of look at it. All of us have blind spots. All of us have blind spots. And everybody, Dharma teachers and not Dharma teachers, we have the blind spots. As much as we can, we open and we look at these blind spots and we say, oh yeah, I'm doing that. I have an automatic sort of area that I didn't look at. It can be a place that I'm irritated or disturbs me. Something keeps disturbing me. That's one of the signs of a blind spot, some lack of quiet in me that keeps me unquiet. And it's a sign that there's something not looked at there that's working on the subconscious and on the unconscious that's disturbing us. So that's a sign that there's just something not looked at. And often it's just assumptions or beliefs that we have about things which are not really true, don't fit life. And so life gets disturbing for us in some ways. So here is ways that in the middle level, I would say, is wisdom. Here is also our dedication to explore truth. What is truth for us? What is being deeper or true or more in touch? So that's the wisdom, and on a more deeper level. And on the deepest level, or the higher level, and I don't so much like these, where is high and where is deep? I'm not sure where is deep and where is high in the bigness of things, but it's a language which we use. It's really looking at things from the life perspective and not from the perspective of me and mine and what I want and what I need. Just opening this perspective into this, as I said, holistic vision of we're all sharing the world together and we're all interrelated and we're in connection with each other. The ant passing by and the observer of the ant, the human being looking at the ant, we're together in this moment. The flower on the side of the path and myself are in this moment together. This sense of being with all the flow of life, this sense of letting go into this flow of life is a deeper wisdom. As it says in Zen, knowing the self is losing the self. Losing the self is gaining the whole world. So it's that knowing, that kind of knowing is wisdom. Knowing the self and the other, knowing ourselves in relationship to the flow of relationship, and the interbeing. So I think with that I'll stop. We'll take a couple of minutes of silence, and then we'll have perhaps one or two questions. By the way, for those that weren't here before, all these talks are going to be on my website, and I think also on the website of the organization. Because it was rather full, this talk, I'm aware of that and might need another listen to catch things that came in and went again through the mind. So if you want to listen again, then you're welcome to go to the website of the Insight Meditation South Bay, or in about 3 weeks, stephenfulder.com, where I've got lots of other talks, by the way. Yeah.
Can I ask a question earlier about Buddhism?
About Buddhism, you're sure?
No, other than
Buddhism.
I want, you know, I